From listener-supported KTOO, welcome to Juno Afternoon, broadcasting live from the homelands of the Occoquan and on demand as a podcast. It's Wednesday, November 27th, the day before the family feast, and I'm your host, Boston Christopher. Gonna cheesh hawa toeksik nusum salamat. Thank you for joining the conversation. Today, we focus on the holiday feast weekend. First, we talk with the organizer and merchants from the Juno Public Market, the annual shopping extravaganza that takes place at Centennial Hall beginning Friday, November 29th. And now that we are reaching December, the JDHS swim team is ready to roll with the annual holiday tree sale fundraiser, which also begins this Friday. And Juno Community Band's brass players are presenting a fun holiday concert this weekend to get you in the mood. Plus, info on their reindeer band, who will be at various venues around town this season. Those conversations, plus Tongass Voices, coming up this hour on Juno Afternoon. And a couple of updates for the schedule for you for the holiday. We have four holiday specials for you across KTOO and KRNN. On KTOO 104.3 and 91.7, Turkey Confidential from the folks at Splendid Table is an annual tradition of chefs taking calls and questions from listeners about all things food for the special day. It will air from 10 a.m. to noon. And in place of Juno Afternoon tomorrow, Giving Thanks will air at 3 p.m. and 7 p.m. Giving Thanks, an annual tradition for over 25 years, combines classical music, songs, and dramatic readings. Over on KRNN at 102.7 and 103.1, we have Horn of Plenty, a feast of music for Thanksgiving at 1 p.m. This Land, Thanksgiving with the American Sound at 2 p.m. And during Ricky D's Thursday show from 10 to noon, he will play Alice's Restaurant in its entirety, as is the usual. Note, Alice Brock, who served as the inspiration for Arlo Guthrie's classic, died last week at the age of 83, so the playing of it will have extra special meaning this year. Find all of the schedules online at ktoo.org under the radio tab. Up next, we'll chat all things public market. You are listening to Juno Afternoon on KTOO. You are listening to community-supported Juno Afternoon on KTOO at 104.3 Juno, 91.7 Juno Auk Bay, and online at ktoo.org. I'm Boston Christopher. With over 175 vendors, the 41st annual Juno Public Market opens this Friday, November 29th at noon. It's also been joined in recent years by the Indigenous Artists and Vendors Holiday Market at Elizabeth Perachevich Hall, which runs parallel to the public market. I'm joined now by public market organizer Peter Metcalf and social media guru Alice Johnson, and one of the vendors at this year's market, and of course, frequent guest to Juno Afternoon, Fu Bao Hartle. Thank you so much. It's a pleasure to have you all in the studio today. Wasi'iti, how's it going?
Thank you for having us. I'm definitely to have a jam-packed Centennial Hall.
Yeah, I don't doubt that it'll be jam-packed. It is pretty much every year. Last year when I went, I could barely get in the door.
Well, Alice and I were just talking about that, and we do have some pretty robust crowds, but towards the end of each day and at the beginning of Saturday and Sunday, it's pretty easy to get in.
Yeah, go first part of the day. First day, Friday is always busy, especially Friday night after people get off work. A lot of people have that day off too, so it usually becomes jam-packed. I think that's last year when I went was on Friday night, and I was just amazed at how much stuff was going on over there. And it's just great, though, because you get all your holiday shopping done. You end up buying a lot of stuff for yourself too, which is just kind of crazy. But Peter, tell us, can you remind us how the public market began? This is the 41st year. Yeah. How did this start all those years ago?
Well, the Centennial Hall was built. Juno Centennial Hall and Convention Center was a project that was completed in May of 1983. And prior to that, I'd been producing some musical concerts, and you know, at the A&B Hall, which is now Elizabeth Radovich Hall. And, you know, it was always a bit of a gamble, but, you know, suddenly we could host an event that was like 1,000, 1,200 people. And we're talking serious money, and for factors that don't need to explain, it was just too much of a gamble. And I realized that we could do something public for a pretty reasonable fee. And then it clicked, the public market, like Seattle. And be frank about it, all that was the genesis of my idea anyway, was do something like the Pike Street Market in Seattle. And I always loved going there. And so we sent out, we mailed in those days. We didn't have any social media to,
we'll get to
landline and
sure.
mail.
Yeah.
And there was a huge response. And right away, we filled out every available space in the Sheffield Ballroom. And we opened on July 23rd, something like that, 1983. And we had trouble opening the Sheffield Ballroom doors. There were so many people in the lobby trying to get in. So it was... It started with a bang, and it's never really ceased.
Wow, that's amazing. And what has changed about the market over the years?
Well, it has expanded, of course. You know, expanded first to the whole Centennial Hall in 1990 and then to the Jack in 2007. But what's really changed is the quality of the goods offered, like what Fubao is bringing to the table. You know, they personally developed products, you know, whether they be photography and gift cards and calendars, like Fubao is going to be presenting to, you know, Native indigenous arts and all manner of things that are generally made by the artists who are going to be presenting them at the public market. And when we first started, there was a lot of I guess quiche would be the word, you know, things that I was surprised people could sell, but they did. But over time, the ones who sold the most kept coming back, and it kept refining and refining, and it's kind of an organic process because we don't judge what the products are. You know, we have a couple rules, but they're not based on the quality of goods sold. It's about if they sell, they sell.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. So,
and what's your favorite thing, or I mean, what's been the best thing about organizing this? You must like something about it. It must be something in you that drives you because you've been doing it for 40 years.
Yeah, well, it's actually fun. And the time that we couldn't do it, which was 2020, it really brought home the fact that I really enjoy doing it. It's like organizing a family reunion. You know, there's a lot of work, a lot of things to organize, but in the end, you're bringing together people who are your friends and family. And in Juneau, that can be a pretty extensive group of people. And I think that's the people who attend and the comments I get, the thing they enjoy most is the social nature of this event.
It's fun. You do see everybody you haven't seen maybe in a while and
exactly
all that.
Right.
And I just realized, I'm just sitting here and I'm realizing that I have on my Eli's Dyes sweatshirt, which I got at Public Market last year, my wallet was from AK Leather Company, who was at the market like 4 or 5 years, maybe a few years ago. And this thing is still in
durable
pristine
product.
Condition. This is made in Alaska. Yeah. I haven't seen him ever come back to it ever, but this has been like my favorite wallet ever, which is just amazing. But it speaks to the quality of the vendors that you're talking about. And I know we have, is it more than half, Alice, of the vendors are from Juneau?
I'd say about half.
Yeah.
And then there's more from all over the state and all over the country.
Yeah, people come from all around for Public Market. It's really just a huge thing. And, of course, one of the vendors that's there and has been there for a few years is you, Fubao.
Yeah. Yeah, it's fun. I used to, before I was a vendor, I used to help people with raffle tickets, handing out raffle tickets at the door.
Oh, I see the raffle tickets.
He came along one day and volunteered to work the door. And, you know, we're not used to taking on volunteers. We pay everybody who works for us. But Fubao was so such a good personality. I just totally enjoyed his
Who
presence.
Can say no to Fubao when he's selling a raffle ticket, right? You're like, you got to say yes. And, of course, Fubao has all kinds of cool stuff. His calendar hangs in my office right now that I got at last year's market, I believe. And then you're also going to be doing you got your note cards and prints from your Alaska photographs, right, Fubao?
Yes, it's made in Alaska.
Yeah,
it's...
and you actually print everything here, right?
Yes.
Yeah, that's really cool.
Fubao is a perfect example of what people get out of the public market. They, you know, this is not ordering online. This is going and finding the product you want to buy for a Christmas present and meet the person who did it.
And what's cool about it is, I mean, Fubao, I know you just had your own First Friday event and other things you do around town, but some people, this is the one time that you can buy their products, where they come out and maybe they have like an online store or something where you can get their stuff. But to see them in person, I know a lot of people who make like the, you know, soaps and things like that. This is their one opportunity. And Alice, are you like highlighting these folks on your social media? Is that your job?
Yeah. So my job is to kind of be the baseline for all 170 or so vendors to come and give their content to me so I can push it out. Because one, there's a lot of vendors that have been with us for a very long time that aren't used to social media. And social media and the younger generations, and even in the older generations, it's the new word of mouth.
Mm.
So for what I've been doing is making reels and making highlight posts for vendors that send me content about what they're going to be highlighting and what they want to be showing to everyone at the Juno Public Market.
Now, here's the question, Alice, because like most of Juno goes to public market, I would think. I mean, everybody knows about it. So what's the challenge for you as like in social media and marketing? What is your goal? What are you trying to do with that?
My goal is to highlight the vendors. Okay. I want them, because everyone knows about the Juno Public Market, but they don't know who is going to be there. Of course, there's everyone that is known to be there, such as Mark Kelly. We just had a video posted about him. He's been at the market for 36 years now, and he says he cannot get sick because he has to be at the public market. That's how important it is to his business, and he gets to, it's the only time of the year he gets to actually interact with the people that he sells his stuff to.
I see.
So my goal and my hope is for our social media is to highlight the vendors that are going to be there for this year, so people will see them as they're scrolling on Instagram and on Facebook and see that, oh, they're going to be there. I need to go down and see them.
Yeah, you know, it's so easy to do your holiday shopping like on Amazon, but it's so much better to do it in person and from small businesses, from small entrepreneurs, and of course some of the bigger folks who are also represented at public market. But it's just great to see and have so many vendors and so many options, and it takes me like, usually I go one day and then I'll go the next day and try to figure out like, what did I see? But then what if it's gone? You know, it's like, it's just, it's such a great experience. It's so fun.
One thing I want to mention here, just as we were talking before we got on the air, I was asking if Fubao and his parents had been to Gull Cove, which is Alice here, is a remarkable young woman. She's taking over the family business at Gull Cove Lodge, which is on the east entrance to Idaho Inlet, which is about eight miles east of Elfin Cove.
Yes, we're right outside Elfin Cove.
But Alice just produced a cookbook.
Oh.
And I wanted her to have a signing, but she doesn't have any in stock anymore. She's already sold out.
I sold out in 4 days. It was something I was not expecting. But I'm going to be handing out QR codes at the public market.
It's like the Fiddlehead Rest book. It's not available.
Exactly.
You got to know somebody to get a copy of it or something, right? Yeah. You're going to make more, though.
But so, yeah, there's more coming in 2 days after the market.
After the market.
I'm doing local deliveries, and so I'm handing out QR codes. It's the best I can do, but yeah.
I get it. Sweet. That's awesome. Okay, now here's a tough question for you, Peter, because this is just something that I've always wondered about. And this is, I know it's a financial question in a sense, but why is it free to go to the Annex at the Jack, but it cost me $10 to get into Centennial Hall?
Well, it's kind of a long answer, but I'll make it short. The the vendors who are offering the only at the public market are concentrated at the in the Centennial Hall. And early on, we were allowing anybody to participate in the public market. And so we ended up having a lot of retail businesses and some franchise lines. And somebody asked me, why am I paying to get into what I could just see these people for free? And and so we decided, I hate saying no to anybody who wants to participate. So for franchise lines, Mary Kay products and stuff, we're not judgmental. You want to participate? You can be in the Jack. And then the Jack ends up being a really mixed group because a lot of people come in late, and they may be from Skagway or whatever, but they're at the Jack. It's well worth going to, but, you know, if you're going to charge admission to an event, my thinking on that was we aren't going to get another dollar if we charge admission to the Jack. And why not have a free venue?
Right, it gives people an opportunity and if they don't want to spend the
$10
thing
that it allowed us to do is we found out it wasn't legal for us to have a admission, charge admission in a venue and then have door prizes. You had to have a gaming license. It's a game of chance. And so we can have all our drawings at the Jack. And so we've really been working on that to draw people over to the Jack. And this year we got Alan Marine donated two $700 travel experience certificates, and we have cash prizes, and we have vendors are donating. There's, you know, I added it up. It's about $4,000 worth of door prizes, not to mention the hourly door prizes. So,
yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, I found some of my best stuff at the Annex, actually. It's really a nice little spot. And, of course, as I mentioned in the intro, the Indigenous Artists and Vendors Holiday Market, which kind of runs coinciding. It's not right. You don't put that on. It's put on by Clinkett and Haida.
I did for a couple years, but I was really walking myself into the ground. When we had that, it was a third venue. And then COVID put an end to it, and then Clinkett Ida picked it up.
Which, yeah, it's great. It's a wonderful.
With my enthusiasm and support.
Yeah, it's a wonderful extra bit. So, Fubel, last couple questions for you before we got to go. What's your experience like at public market versus other things that you do? What do you love about public market?
I love about it because we haven't seen the people since last year's public market. I feel like it's a big family reunion.
Family reunion, yes, yeah, for
big
sure.
One. Like Peter said, is everybody comes together as a community to support people's products.
Right, absolutely. I love it. It's such a great time. You do see people you haven't seen in probably the same in a year.
And, you know, earlier you asked me what I love about the public market. Well, one of the most important things to me is family. And my family has been a big part of it. My wife, Sandy, is a major part of it. And then my nieces and nephews and children of friends have grown up in the public market, and they're now vendors or, adults with children.
Yeah, so yeah, it's amazing.
41
right?
years, you see a lot. And,
you've seen generations for sure.
It's been really fun.
That's wonderful. Well, it's going to be great to see you at the public market, Fubao, and check all the social medias. How do we find those?
So you can find us on Instagram at Juno Public Market. That's our handle. And then we're just on Facebook at Juno Public Market. And we're going to be posting a lot more over the next few days. We have a giveaway going on both Instagram and Facebook for a Bridget Bucket by Kodiak Coat Company. You just have to follow us and Bridget on Facebook or Instagram, and then tag a friend that you want to bring to the market to enter to win a Bridget Bucket.
Awesome. That's great.
I say something?
Yeah.
We need to have a jam-packed Centennial Hall, bumper-to-bumper traffic, traffic in the hall. We need to have a biggest line outside of Centennial Hall.
Oh, okay. I'm going to go when the line's not happening. And bumper to bumper is good because that means there's a lot of people out, which is great, especially in these snowy conditions over the next couple days. Well, thank you so much, Alice, Fubao, Peter,
thank
for coming
you.
In.
Thank you.
For more information, go to junopublicmarket.com or follow on the socials, as Alice said. And for information on the Indigenous Artist Market over at Elizabeth Paratrovich Hall, you can go to clinkettandhaida.gov. That's their the handle on Facebook. There's a lot of information on their Facebook for that. So really appreciate you all coming in so much today. Gunnith Cheese for being here. Really appreciate it.
Bye.
Thank you.
Bye.
Thank you.
Okay. Now, Tongass Voices, perspectives from the homelands of the Occoquan and beyond. Today, we hear from an apprentice, Moira Johnson Sidney, who is working with Master Carver Wayne Price on a dugout canoe, or yauk, here in Juneau for the Gold Belt Heritage Foundation. Moira shares about carving, how carving has added stability to her life during a tumultuous time.
My name is Moira Johnson Sidney. I'm a volunteer apprentice carver. This is my first time working on a dugout. My father's clan is Kagwantan. My family's from Yakutat and like Klukwan area. My Tlingit nickname is Gooch Yedi. Well, this project in general, it came into my life at a very delicate time, I guess. So it's been kind of a stabilizer for me. I've lost a lot of family this year. You know, lost a lot to alcoholism. You know, different types of addictions. I've had a lot of issues on my own, and so this carving project, it's really put things into perspective, I guess. And it's definitely like kind of helped me put myself back together, I guess. But yeah, it's been really, really special to me. You know, there's like, not to get cheesy, I guess, but you know, some people they start going to church, or like, you know, they find God, or they make art, or they make stories. You know, and some people make boats, I guess, just different things to kind of patch up their, you know, smaller parts of their damaged selves. But I'm from Yakutat. My family is from Yakutat. They have cultural things here and there. They're in celebration. They have the Tlingit language in the schools, but they don't have boats. So I wanna bring dugouts back home, and I definitely have a lot of family that could benefit from it. Younger, you know, cousins who are younger than I am, who struggle with, you know, alcohol. It starts when you're like, you know, 11, 12, 13. But carving kind of found me. I mean, well, Gold Belt kind of kept me in the carving realm ever since I was like 15, basically. You know, I kind of veer off and get distracted by different things that aren't really as important. And they always kind of find me and bring me back.
That was Moira Johnson Sidney on how yauk carving has helped her find purpose and direction. She's part of a group of apprentices working with Master Carver Wayne Price to carve a dugout canoe here in Juneau. Up next, we chat with Juneau community bands about their holiday brass concert happening this weekend. This is Juneau Afternoon on KTOO.
Support from Hanson Gress. Seeking curious people who like technology, network engineering, and customer support. Opportunities for those who thrive on problem solving. Details at hansongress.com/careers.
I know, it's only Thanksgiving and we're hearing Christmas music, but that's part of the fun of having the holidays begin. This is Juneau Afternoon from your listener-supported public media station, KTOO. I'm your host, Boston Christopher. The Juneau Community Band's brass players are coming together and presenting a concert of fun holiday music this weekend on Saturday, November 30th and Sunday, December 1st. The concert is free with donations welcome, and you can get full details at JuneauCommunityBand.org. And joining me now to share more is Sarah McNair Grove and conductor Alan Young. Gunath Chish for being here today. Wasaiti, how's it going?
Pretty good. Thank you for having us.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Oh, I've had you on the wrong mic, Sarah. There we go. Okay. Hi.
Hello. Thank you for having us.
There we go. Now the world can hear you. Now, this is called Christmas in Brass. That's why we were playing a little brass music there.
Right.
And, of course, it's going to be some holiday tunes. So, Alan, let me talk to you. What's on the docket for the weekend?
Yeah. So, thank you for having us. We have a lot of different arrangements of Christmas or holiday music from a few different kind of nationalities of carols and things like that. So we have some French music, some English music, some German music, and it's a lot of things that you will hear that are very familiar, songs that you know. But what I like about the program is how they are arranged in very interesting ways. So they are adapted to kind of more modern sounds, and you have a carol from the 1600s, but you will recognize that melody, but it's in a very new and interesting way. You got some jazz and influences in there, a lot of the concert, and yeah, it's just a lot of really fun music that all has that holiday theme.
I see. And I know that you are highlighting "Twas the Night Before Christmas," right? That's one of the main songs that'll be on the program.
That's a really fun one, and we have our percussionist extraordinaire John Cooper is changing roles to be a narrator, and so that's a really fun piece. It's a lot of kind of sound effect sort of music set to the poem.
Yeah.
And so that is being narrated while there is a musical accompaniment to it.
I see. Who came up with the accompaniment?
Oh, let's see. I have that written down. not me. Someone other than me. It was by a really pretty prominent arranger, Anthony DiLorenzo,
Okay. I see. And Sarah, so this is it just the brass players from the community bands? Obviously, there's some percussion, I would assume, in there too. But
yes, this is really just the brass. There's about 15 players and a couple of percussionists. So it's trumpets, trombones, French horns, tubas. Yeah.
Wow. And was it their idea?
Yeah, we have a chamber music concert every year, and we get together small ensembles, and this spring the brass played something, and they said, this is so much fun, let's do something else. And so they found these really lovely Christmas things that, as Alan said, you'll recognize them, but they're arranged just a little bit differently.
Mm.
And they said, let's have a Christmas program. So here we are. So you can go to the public market and then come and relax in these wonderful concerts afterwards.
That is a good weekend. And I guess it's okay to have Christmas music after Thanksgiving,
It's after Thanksgiving.
I don't know what the rules are, but I think that seems like a pretty good rule.
That's the rule I abide by.
Is that it? Okay.
Yeah. Okay. For sure.
Okay. And so this gets you right in the mood. Thanksgiving is over and you're right into it and you're doing your holiday shopping anyway.
Yeah.
And then you can stop by the free concert. Now tell me, on Saturday and Sunday, what are the times for the concert?
Saturday is 7 o'clock. Sunday is 3 o'clock in the afternoon, and they are both at Northern Lights Church.
Okay. They're over at the church on Saturday and Sunday. Okay,
correct.
That's great. And I'm really curious about, it's free, of course.
It's free.
Yeah, mm-hmm. That is wonderful. Of course, you take donations.
Our gift to the Juno community for supporting us. And so, yeah, we just wanted to say thank you. And if you would like to support us, there will be a donation basket.
And do you have a concert around this time usually?
No, we don't. This is something new for us this year.
Ah, okay.
Yeah.
I was wondering about that because I know you do so many things throughout the year. You do the wonderful 4th of July concert out on the patio there at the Sea Alaska Plaza. You did that this year, right?
We did.
Yeah, that
mm-hmm.
is so cool. And then I want to ask you another question about the reindeer.
Yeah, the reindeer band.
The reindeer band.
Yeah, pops up this time of year to play Christmas music around town, and we will be at the Gallery Walk at the State Museum inside playing some background music. They're having a pop-up market, and so we'll be there providing atmosphere. And then we're going to go to the Pioneers Home and Riverview Senior Living, so places where people can't come out. We like to go and share some music of the season.
And what is the reindeer band made up of?
It is made up of musicians from our community. All ages are welcome. You do need to be seventh grade so that you have some facility with your instrument, but everybody is welcome to play with us.
Oh, that's great. So it could be, is it a large number of people in the band, or whoever's available to play?
Yeah, kinda? Whoever's available. We usually have 12 to 15 people, which is nice for the size of the venues that we play in.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, especially at the senior living centers. Those are wonderful spaces there.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's so cool. And of course, donations help make that possible
that's
as
right.
well.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of cool. So, Alan, tell me a little bit about you and your conducting. How did you get into conducting?
Oh, well, I've always loved music. And I mean, even back when I was a kid, you could find me in my room listening to recordings and flailing my arms around trying to organize it. So I went to high school here in Juneau at JDHS, and then I went on to get a music education degree at Pacific Lutheran University, where I did a lot of conducting. I conducted the concert band there as a student. And then for the past 8 years, I was working at Thunder Mountain High School with their choir and orchestra.
So. I see. Okay. And what are you doing now?
Well, I mean,
you're in transition, as they say.
Yeah, a little bit of transition there, which is both difficult but also joyous because, you know, as the community knows, there is that big combination of the schools. And so I don't have my music teaching job right now, but I am I'm a stay-at-home father for my 8-month-old.
And ooh, so that's a actually, job right there.
Yeah, so the most joyous thing to come out of otherwise a little difficult situation, but
yeah.
So we are at home and making a lot of music together, although it's a little bit less organized music than what you hear.
Conducting an 8-month-old it's a little different than the community bands, right? That's pretty funny. So it's interesting too, because this time when you're having a family, obviously it takes up a lot of your focus and your time, especially an 8-month-old. But what is your goal as a conductor? What would you love to be doing, let's say, in 10 years?
Well, I think my goal as a conductor has always been to simply share the beauty of music with everybody who's able to come and listen. So wherever that brings me, or whatever avenue or media that comes up, that's what I want to be doing. It's just an opportunity to share in the beauty and the gift that is music. But other than that general overview, wherever it takes me, I'm all right with.
That's kind of cool. And do you have composing in your repertoire? Are you looking to compose things as well?
I have done a little bit of that, not very much. There are certainly people that are much more adept to that than I am. I think my personal gifts or skill set is more in interpreting what other people have written.
And I see.
Trying to bring out the emotional resonance of what someone else has done.
So this is an interesting question, because I've always wondered this. So we watch a conductor at an orchestra or something like this where there's something happening, and you've rehearsed the pieces before. So what is the conductor's job? Doesn't everybody already know what to do?
Well, ideally, yes.
Hopefully.
So there's the practical side of, preventing any train wrecks from happening, because you have a lot of people on stage that are trying to communicate all while not speaking and completely focusing on something else. But you have the musicians who are on stage that you're working with, and you have the piece of music that was written for the group. And I think the conductor's role is to communicate the composer's wishes to the musicians, and to help shape the sound of the ensemble so that what the composer was trying to portray in their piece of music is accurately and beautifully portrayed to the audience as well.
I see. That sounds really good. Also, it seems like I know for me, I don't play any instruments, but I feel like if I did, I know my timing would be bad. Is it about timing too? Is it like keeping everybody in? Because don't some people get a little bit fast? Like, I know that can happen, right? They get faster than what it should be. And so you're sort of kind of measuring that as you go, and are you slowing people down?
Well, maybe there's at the more basic level, yes, you need to be in charge of what the tempo of the music is going to be. And again, so that it is the appropriate, it's the appropriate energy.
Yeah. You know,
because with the speed of the music also comes the energy. And but then that's hopefully the base level that you get out. So hopefully what you can get to once everybody has a good and sound understanding of the tempo and the meter of the piece is that you can kind of move forward from that so that you can push some sections and pull back on some sections again to create that that artistry.
I see. Yeah. Wow. It seems like a great job. Like it seems like a really cool, interesting job because you're working with musicians, you're working with pieces of music. And like you said, you're interpreting sort of what the composer had in mind and getting that to be live in the space, which is just fantastic. And Sarah, anything else that after Christmas in brass, wrapped in brass, mm-hmm. What's next for the Juno Community Bands?
The next thing is our spring concert for our wind ensemble that we call Talk Who Wins, and that will be March 1st.
Okay.
And so we'll be back for that. But Ken Geyer, who was the high school band teacher at JDHS for many, many years, is going to play a trumpet solo. We're just delighted to have him.
Awesome.
Was your teacher, yeah, huh?
Yeah, Mr. Geyer. He was one of my teachers.
That's so cool. Well, Gunnath Cheesh for being here. It's the Juno Community Bands. It's Christmas Wrapped in Brass. It's happening this Saturday, November 30th at 7 p.m. and Sunday, December 1st. At what time again, Sarah?
December 1st on Sunday is 3 p.m. in the afternoon.
3 p.m. in the afternoon. It's all at the Kuneakidi Northern Light United Church. And for more details, you can go to junocommunityband.org. I really appreciate you both being here today. Thank you so much.
Yeah. Thank you for having us.
Of course. Okay, up next, we are going to talk about the annual holiday tree sale. It's the JDHS Swim Team Club fundraiser, and it starts Friday. We'll talk to them here next on Juno Afternoon. But first, a savory moment.
Step in to the savory moment. If you don't know Peter Miller, book curator, here is where to find him, a brick and glass warehouse in Post Alley, between South Main and South Jackson, downtown Seattle. If you visit his shop, Peter Miller Books, for reading material, he'll hand you one of 5,000 design titles. Maybe The Spirit of Chairs, or Miracles in Concrete, or Why Fonts Matter. If you are his employee, he'll hand you lunch. Peter Miller Books is proving ground for a theory that while the midday meal is overlooked in our modern age, especially in the workplace, it can be revived with a simple practice. Make lunch every day, no matter the weather, the season, or the workload. Gather with colleagues, relax, and enjoy yourself. Peter Miller believes so steadfastly in the midday meal, he wrote a book about it, Lunch at the Shop, detailing the daily crew lunches prepared at his store. Here are his best tips. Keep a basic supply kit on hand. Parsley, lemons, fruit, cheese, pickles, and olives are a good start. Strive for healthy menus that rejuvenate, leaving diners in good shape to finish their workday. Take a little extra time for a sparkling presentation. This one is no surprise since Miller is a design aficionado. Also, leave pencils, laptops, and phones behind. If you enjoy lunch at the shop, check out Peter Miller's follow-up book, How to Wash the Dishes. Is this a meditation on soap and water or a hint to his employees? You'll have to read it to find out. Available where intriguing books are sold, including Peter Miller. Find Peter Miller's recipe for pear, brie, and almond butter sandwiches at savorymoment.org. From the studios of KCAW in Sitka, Alaska, I'm Beth Short-Rhodes. Whatever is on your dinner table tonight, may you savor the moment.
Support for Juno Afternoon comes from Heritage Coffee Roasting Company, providing Juno with locally roasted coffee for over 40 years. With cafes and drive-through locations throughout Juno. More at heritagecoffee.com.
KTOO would like to acknowledge that we broadcast from the homelands of the Occoquan. The Clan Edi have stewarded this area for thousands of years.
Today, our studios sit on a spot once part of the Tidelands, now covered over with buildings, roads, and parking lots. We recognize those families who traveled to and from these Tidelands to fishing and hunting grounds and to gatherings in other villages and still cherish it as an important part of their way of life for today and for future generations. You're listening to Juno Afternoon from Studio 2K at KTOO. I'm your host, Boston Christopher. It's a tradition like no other. You need a tree, and it's the Fred Meyer parking lot where you go. But you got to be quick, because these sell out. And it's all for a good cause. The JDHS swim team. It begins this Friday, November 29th. All details at jdswimdive.org. And I'm joined in studio now by Clive, Pacific, and Kennedy, all members of the JDHS swim team. Gunath Cheesh, how are you? Wasaiti. What's going on?
We're good.
Yeah.
Okay, we're good. We're getting ready. Are we unloading? Are we packing the parking lot? What's happening, Clive?
We're all moving in with sales right now, and we're currently all just very excited to serve you guys. Most definitely the highest quality of trees in Juneau.
Yeah, where do you get the trees from?
They're shipped up from down south, and we get them in a crate, but then we unpackage them and make sure they're looking nice.
Make them beautiful.
Yeah, fluff them out.
Because they probably all come, like, they're wrapped in, like, chicken wire, or they're wrapped up with cord or whatever.
Yeah, with string.
I see, okay. And then you also have wreaths, right?
Yes, we do.
And do the wreaths come from down south as well? Where do they come from?
Yeah, they all come in like one shipment together.
So you have a vendor that you're using to make that happen.
Yeah.
Yeah, I see. Okay. So give us the details on when it starts and all that good stuff. Who wants to take that? Who's got the details? Is it Pacific's got the details?
Okay, so our opening day is Friday on November 29th, day after Thanksgiving, right when you're doing your Black Friday shopping. Come on over. We are open 11 a.m. to 7 p.m. that day. And then we will be open Monday through Friday, 5 p.m. to 7 p.m. So after work, nice and easy to come grab a tree. And then Saturday and Sundays, we're open all day from 10 a.m. to 5:30 p.m., and that schedule will be repeating until the trees sell out.
And they usually, in years past, I know they've gone really quick, right? Like, is it a week? Do I have a week? Do I need to get there, like, this weekend? Like, what's the deal?
You probably have about 3 weeks before everything's all sold out.
Okay. But the top-of-the-line best choices are going to go pretty quick, right?
For sure.
Yeah. And you have different kinds of trees? You want to tell us about that, Kennedy?
We have three types. So we have the noble fir, the Norman fir, and the Douglas fir. And they're all a little slightly different. It's like some of them, like the Norman, has kind of a mild scent. Norman has no scent. And then the Douglas fir has a scent as well. So you can choose.
What do they look different?
Yeah. Some of them have like softer needles, bigger branches. It's easier to see in person, I feel like.
Yeah, right. I'm sure people could Google images of it and see which one they wanted. And do you put them in different categories there on the lot? Like, do you put them like, hey, I want to shop for my Douglas fir over here?
Yeah, we do. We have it pretty well organized.
Which is the best one for cats? When the cats jump on the tree, which is the best? Which one's not going to poke them the most?
You'll know it's a good tree if your cats are definitely poking through it.
I'd probably say Douglas fir because they have a little bit softer needles.
That's the softer needle one?
Yeah.
Okay, that's awesome. That's so good. And they range in prices, right? They're different prices. Does the price depend on the size of the tree or is it the kind of tree?
Yeah, it's mostly size.
Mostly size.
It's a little bit of both, though. So the Douglas firs are $75, the Nordmans are $90 to $105, and the noble firs are $60 to $155. And then that scale depends on what size tree you get.
I see. Okay. And then the wreaths are $40.
Yeah.
Okay. And that's really great. And are there different kinds of wreaths? Or are they similar in terms of style? Is there little ones and large ones, or do they have size-wise? They're one size.
Yeah, they're all the same.
Okay, I see. They're all the same. That sounds good. And Fred Meyer is so nice to you to allow your product and your sale to be in the parking lot. And then I'm sure you have help with the shipping as well. AML, they help you out with that?
Yeah.
Yeah, so I just wanted to shout out your sponsors because it's all for a good cause, right? So is this the swim team's, like, largest fundraiser of the year? Is this where you make the most money?
We have two big fundraisers. We have Battle of the Burgers, and that's in September. Mm-hmm. And then we have this one that brings in a good amount of money for
us. I see. Battle of the Burgers in September. How did I miss that? I love me a burger. What was that about?
Most of us will make up a burger and set up a stand, and then that one was pretty packed this year.
You mean like really you well. Make up, like I'm going to put pineapple and whatever on my burger, sriracha and pineapple, and then you sell that?
Yep.
And it comes from your brains, like the ideas?
Yep.
Teenagers' ideas of burgers, that's kind of scary, right?
Oh, yeah.
All right, so I want to talk a little bit about the swim team itself, and I know in years past, when we had Thunder Mountain, we did this sale as a combined thing between both schools, but now you are all one school again. And so are all of the how many athletes are on the swim team? Do we know?
49.
We have Josiah, who's the coach in the background, coaching, which is good. So we have 49, apparently. That's good. Yes. And that's made up of different – is it like relay teams and then individual events? And then is there any like synchronized swimming or anything like that? You don't do that in the
swim
club.
Synchronized, no.
No. Okay. So it's mostly like competitive swimming?
Yes.
And with a dive team on the side.
There's a dive team.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right,
But of course, don't let that get in the way because the divers definitely work as hard as the surfers, if not anything. It's more of the mental focus part for the divers.
Yeah,
as
for sure.
Surfers. Yeah.
So, Clive, what is your event? What do you specialize in?
I like to specialize in, like, this year I was actually surprised myself. I was doing breaststroke a whole lot for some of the season. I didn't think it would take me to finals and regions, but... it got me there, most definitely. But normally my strokes, if I had to say, are freestyle and backstroke, which are pretty great strokes.
And is the season over?
Yes.
Yeah, it's all over.
Okay, so it's a fall season? Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. it goes from like what? The early? Do you start like football players? Do you start before the school year begins?
Yeah, we have preseason starting in early August, and then... our first meets around September, and then state wraps up the season in the beginning of November.
I see. So it just happened a few weeks ago. Yeah, the final state stuff.
Yeah.
And you're traveling all over Southeast and up North as well. Do you get up to Anchorage and stuff to compete?
So we have our in-season meets, which are around Southeast, going to like Petersburg, Ketchikan, et cetera. And then... we have regions, and then from regions, those who qualify head up to Anchorage for state to culminate the season.
I see. Okay. And so, Pacific, what is your event of choice?
During season, I was specializing in 100 back and the 500 free.
100, backstroke, and the 100, how is 100 meters?
100 yards.
100 yards. Oh, you don't use the meter system in the swimming?
Some swimming pools do, but for high school season, we do short course yards.
Mm-hmm. I see. Okay. What is a short course yard? What does that mean?
So the way that pools are is there's long course, which is an Olympic sized swimming pool, and then there's short course, which is a little bit under half the distance.
Okay. I see. And then, for you, Kennedy, what's your choice event?
During season, I was swimming the 100 breaststroke and the 100 butterfly.
Ooh, the butterfly. Yeah. That's the one where people are like, it looks like they're kind of having, they're going fast, right?
Yes.
Yeah. How does that work for you? Like, is it fun?
Yeah, it gets fun after I have trained a little bit.
Because is the breathing on that one a little difficult?
It's mostly about timing with it. I'd say it's a lot easier than like freestyle timing your breathing.
Is it? Okay.
At least for me.
For
Clive
you.
Gave me a
Clive's
look.
Like saying, I don't know about that. Clive, do you do the breaststroke at all? I mean, butterfly?
No. Most definitely.
He was thinking about it. Did you try it?
Oh, yeah. Butterfly is definitely a challenging stroke for, like, most starting swimmers. Like, for definitely, and it's definitely is for me too, most definitely.
Yeah, but, I think yeah, it looks
I
so
couldn't even I can't even measure up to Kennedy's like timing and breath. And,
wow,
like, she's like gone in the.
And
in
how practice. Long have you been swimming, Kennedy?
I've been swimming since I was about 8 or 9.
8 or 9?
Yeah, competitively, but I've been in the water since I was very young.
Whoa, that's wild. What about you, Pacific?
I've been competitively swimming since I was 6, so like 11 years now. Yeah.
Holy moly. And what about you, Clive?
About 8 or 9. That's how long.
Like, age-wise?
Age-wise. I started swimming at 9, I believe, and so forth. So.
So here's the question. I don't know what year you all are. It doesn't really matter. But do you start thinking about what you want to do with this as you get into thinking beyond high school? Are you thinking about collegiate swimming? Any of you?
I'm a senior, and I have hopes of it, but nothing's completely definite with college and such. But, yeah, I hope to.
And because it would be – and is there any – like, is it tough to sort of think about, like, Olympics or something like that? Or that kind of competitive swimming beyond – or does that – I don't know what the lifespan of a swimmer is. How long do you swim for? Like, you know, like dancers – you know, age out after a while.
Mm. It like really depends on the person, I think. I mean, there's no, like, set timeline for people who are swimming. But I don't know. PJ Foy went to the Olympic trials this summer. And he and Lydia Jacoby are kind of up there swimming-wise.
Do you think about it, Kennedy? Do you think, like, if I train hard enough?
I have hopes of swimming on a club team in college, so not as much pressure as, like,
I see.
Going for a scholarship.
Yeah, right. Because, I mean, that's like, you got to get in the pool at like 4 a.m. You got to be there 3, 4, 5, 6 hours a day, right? Is that what you have to do if you're going that route?
Yeah, for sure.
Wow. Josiah doesn't make you guys get up at 4 o'clock in the morning, does he?
Almost.
Not quite. During season, our morning practices were 6 to 8, so.
Oh, you did have to get up in the morning.
A little better than 3 a.m., but not by much.
Yeah.
Whoa. So did you do after school as well?
Yeah, we had some sort of doubles every school day, but it was varying between weights and swimming and then mental training.
That is awesome. That is so awesome. What a wonderful sport. I was never able to get into swimming, but I envy those who do. It sounds like it's really awesome. And, of course, what else is awesome is the annual holiday tree sale, and it starts this Friday. It's your big fundraiser, one of them. And it's going to be going from, on Friday, we're starting at 11 a.m., 11 to 7, and then on the weekends from 10 to 5:30, and then after that, the weekdays will be from 5 to 7 p.m. until you sell out. And Kennedy thinks you have a couple of weeks to make that happen. There's all kinds of choices of trees and wreaths, and of course you can get more information at jdswimdive.org. That's where it has all the information and all that kind of stuff. And are you guys, does the swim team also have like an Instagram page where people can follow you?
Yeah, we do. It is at JDHSSwimDive on Instagram.
JDHSSwimDive on Instagram. Great. Well, it's great to have you here. Thank you so much, Gunnar Cheese, for being here. People need to get over to the Fred Meyer parking lot, get their holiday tree. I really appreciate y'all being here today. Thanks so much. And break legs in the future of whatever you do with the swim team or beyond. Appreciate y'all being here.
Thank you.
That will do it for today's Juno Afternoon. Juno Afternoon is off for the holiday. You can enjoy some special holiday programming in its place. Head over to kto.org/program-schedule for more info. Juno Afternoon airs Wednesday through Friday at 3 p.m. right here on KTO Juno 104.3 and KAUK Juno Auk Bay 91.7. Find the show online at ktoo.org/JunoAfternoon, where you can listen to episodes, subscribe to the podcast, or find out how to be a guest on the show. I'm Boston Christopher, producer and host of the program, with help today from Lisa Purvis. Thanks, and have a great holiday weekend. Gunnar Cheese.